Good morning. We'd like to welcome everyone to this morning's study session from the Mesa City Council for Thursday, January 31st, 2013. Councilmember Higgins will not be joining us. I think she's out of town.
No. I'm on the phone.
Oh, you're on the phone. She is out of town, but she is joining us. First item on the agenda is to review the agenda for next Monday's regular council meeting. Page 2, items 1 through 5A. Items 5B through 5D. Item 5E and 5F. Five G through 7A, seven B through 10A.
We get such a short agenda.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed Employee Wellness Center.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We are excited to come to you this morning and talk to you about a proposal we have for the development and implementation of an on-site wellness center for our employees and their dependents. The idea about an on-site wellness center has gained a lot of popularity and a lot of traction from throughout the country in a lot of cities, including several right here in Arizona. The idea being, if we have our own on-site wellness center or medical clinic that can provide the same level of service, if not greater level of service, than what employees can receive from, say, their general care practitioner or from a minute clinic or from an urgent care center or a take care clinic. If it can provide the same level of service, if not better level of service, than what they receive out in the general market, we can do so at a lower cost than what the employees are charged, thereby saving the City of Mesa some money and our trust fund. Now, there are still a lot of details yet to be worked out on this proposal. We're moving kind of from a concept to an RFP stage. Things like where the clinic should be located or the days and hours of operation and how much we would charge employees, if any, and the specific types of services that we would have the clinic initially provide. But today, we just wanted to provide you a very high-level overview about the research that we've done so far and talk to you about what we would propose to be our next steps. And then later on, we would come back to you with more specific details about what that would look like. So to do that this morning, Alicia Solano from our Water Department, who is a member of our Employee Benefits Task Force and has been the point person on this project, will lead us through what that looks like.
Good morning. First, I wanted to let you know that this subcommittee that's been formed is representative of several different departments, including the Benefits Department, the Fire Department, Human Resources, Police, Safety Services, and Water Resources. Unfortunately, due to some illness, not all of the members are here today. They could utilize the clinic today. The first slide is showing a national trend. This is not new. We've come to you a few times before letting you know that healthcare costs continue to rise, and they're anticipated to continue increasing over time. What that means to Mesa is in 10 years, we went from $8.3 million in expenditures to over almost $45 million, almost $46 million. So we've more than five times the increase in fiscal year expenditures. To give you an idea of what that means is if you look at the last 5 years, the premiums have increased 63% in 5 years. So that's an increase to the employee out of pocket, and that's also an increase to the City of Mesa, dollars that could be used for other general fund items that are going to cover the costs of medical premiums. As Gary said, one of the things we're looking at is to try and be proactive to bring those costs down. Why an employee wellness center? Well, we do anticipate there's going to be some substantial savings to the city, as well as rate containment. The benefits include medical and RX savings, hopefully to be the employer of choice. And one of the other benefits, we feel that it'll be employee retention. If we really establish a relationship with a clinic provider here, that it would retain employees. Benefit to the employee, obviously, is a quick and an inexpensive service and early detection. The mission of the wellness clinic would be to offer its employees, their dependents, a reliable family-style, cost-effective, quality, convenient healthcare service with a focus on preventative care. And what we're really striving for here is to bring back that family care provider. We want to go away from the minute clinic, the quick 15-minute in and out, but really establish a relationship with the patient. So you might come in for, not feeling well or your throat hurts, but it might be that you're then asked about your overall health. We really want this to be a wellness management center so that it's providing both short-term and long-term benefits to the employees and their dependents. Some of the potential wellness clinic services that we've defined, I'm not going to read all of them here, but really workers' compensation is one of them, basic primary care services, health management, police and fire physical exams. Potential returns on investment include benefits trust fund savings, increased productivity and decreased sick usage for employees, enhanced recruitment and retention, employee health enhancement, increased employee morale, and one of the other goals would be to move more people from the copay to the 80-20 plan. We feel that if you have a clinic that's low cost or free, that you might have some people that are on the higher copay plan go to the 80-20 plan if they can utilize the service.
Have you looked, excuse me, speaking of wellness, I don't have a voice. How exactly will that work? I mean, I get it conceptually, but have you looked at the actual numbers? I mean, what are the financial incentives to go from the copay plan down to the wellness? I mean, I'm assuming that the financial cost to the employee would be significant, or savings would be significant enough, but how exactly would that work?
Well, it would, Mayor and Council. For example, if you look at just at the premiums that the employees pay on the copay plan, they are significantly higher than the premiums the employee pay on the 80-20 plan. Some people like the copay plan because of its convenience. You simply throw down your copay at the doctor and it's all good. Whereas on the 80-20 plan, of course you've got the deductible, and then after you meet the deductible, the city pays 80% of the cost and the employee has to pay 20. Sometimes that's a little more difficult for the employees to understand, and so out of convenience they fall back to the copay plan. If they have this alternative with a very low cost or no cost medical clinic, why would you pay that higher premium for the copay when you can get the same level of service at the clinic? That would then move them or incentivize them to want to move to the 80-20 plan with a lower.
My guess is that they're not going to consider it without some education as the same level of service.
Of course.
Yes. And a copay, as long as your doctor's in the system, you go, you pay your 15, 20, 25, whatever it is. And you're done, and you get to choose where you go for the most part.
Right.
Any type of wellness center so it's almost like a HMO type of a setup. I know it's not exactly the same. The concept is, wait a second, I'm not going to my own place. I'm not going to my own doctor, unless that cost differential is quite significant. I mean, don't you think that people would still default back to what they feel comfortable with, which is the copay?
Well, I think there's two parts to that.
Okay.
Yes, right at the moment, I think there's a high level of comfort if somebody has a relationship with the doctor that they have now. Our concept is to have our own medical center with the same quality doctors and nurses that the employees experience now at their own regular home care facility, and be as comfortable with our facility as they would elsewhere. Now, if they get a good experience, they develop a good relationship with that doctor, that may replace then that doctor that they have elsewhere that's charging them a little bit higher both for the visit, as well as the higher premium costs for the copay. So we want there to be a home doctor feel for this medical clinic.
I get that. I'm just looking at human nature, and with medical, it seems like people default. They pay higher for ease and for comfort.
Yes.
And comfort is who you've been going to. And comfort, a lot of people feel very strongly, as we saw in the healthcare debate, about their ability to choose their own doctor.
Yes.
And when you go into some wellness center, that, you know, there's a trade-off. Now, I get that what the goal is, and I know that you do that. I'm wondering, are the premiums or the costs do you think are going to be significant enough from the copay down to the wellness center that financial incentive would be enough that they would say, okay, I'll get over it, I'll give it a try, and I'll go there. I mean, do you anticipate it being that significant? Because I don't see people just saying, oh, it'll be easier, so I'm going to go to a center, unless those cost savings are significant enough.
Well, I think as we've looked at this, there may be that motivation may come to bear if we keep this at a low cost. I think what we're planning on doing, frankly, with this is having a very different experience at the doctor's office.
Okay.
Because as we go through the solicitation of the RFP, we're not necessarily just hiring the vendor just to come in and take over. We're asking the vendor to do a lot of the services, but frankly, what we're going to ask is that we're going to select the doctor. This is going to be, if you would, the city's doctor for city employees. And we expect that there's going to be, instead of the motivation to try to move as many people through the doctor's office in a day, as you typically would have to do today, that we want this to be really a holistic view of the employee's health. So what we're hoping to do is change the experience and really make it a different experience for the employees as well as in their benefit. Now, the cost for us from the city's perspective is we estimate today it costs about $100 per visit to go to a doctor. We're hoping to cut that in half with this proposal. And if we can get the right amount of utilization, we don't have to get 100% utilization.
What is the scale that you have to get before this thing starts to make financial sense as far as number of employees?
You know, that really depends on a lot. It depends on where we choose to locate it.
I like that definitive answer. That's good.
What'll happen, Mayor, is when we go, what we need is, what we don't have on part of that formula to tell you what that is, we have to wait for the vendors to give us their cost. And then we'll have a utilization. We'll then know how much it costs. We know now how much it costs us to go to, you know, a doctor visit, and then we'll be able to understand what it will cost with this vendor. What we've been able to figure out right now is that we feel pretty comfortable that through some of the savings we've realized in the last couple of years through some changes in our benefits plan, we've recognized some one-time savings. And what we've done is we've held on to those savings so we can invest that into the facility or the improvements or whatever. And so we've held on to that so that we can invest. The idea is we want to take those one-time savings and invest them into a program like this, which we think will then create many returns of savings over the years. So that's one of the answers that we have to bring back to the council once we get the proposals. Because today, if we said it was 50%, we're guessing at how much it really is going to cost, you know, the vendors to tell us how much the doctor is going to cost and the equipment and the laboratory services and all that. When we have that information, then we'll be able to understand what our utilization has to be. The experience has been from other, mostly in the private sector and some in the public sector, is that, frankly, when they open up these wellness centers, instead of being concerned about a lack of participation, they've actually been
overwhelmed,
struggling with trying to keep up with the demand, and they've had to expand much faster in almost every case than they had originally planned. And that the dilemma of that is then it begins to impact that unique experience that we were trying to create at the beginning, and it becomes more something like they're used to today. So we'll have to figure out how to balance.
Well, and
all
that's where pricing, I think, comes in.
Convenience. It's the idea that these medical professionals are just for city employees, and so we can offer some different services and wellness programs.
Okay. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you. This is, I think, an interesting proposal, and I think the key is to remember the focus is not just on saving costs for us, but for well-being of employees. The fallacy of too many of these similar centers in the private sector is they have a doc-in-the-box syndrome, where it's just in and out, and it's purely to save the employer money, and it results in an unpleasant experience for employees who don't want to go back. And the reason it becomes that is the responders to your RFP really, you know, they sometimes lowball their costs and get in and realize, again, they're kind of overwhelmed with it, and the service diminishes to employees to try to stay within that cost parameter. And so that's why it'll be very interesting to see who responds and how it works. I do have two questions regarding applying this in the worker compensation setting. I'm assuming by utilizing this for worker compensation that the wellness center would be the facility where employees would first be directed to go for the initial evaluation after their injury, and then they still retain the right to pick their own attending physician. That would be correct, right?
Yes.
And my second question, would this facility be one that in the worker comp setting, would you be using the physicians at this center for independent medical examinations, or would those go outside? And the reason I ask this is, in the private sector, when employees are sent for independent medical evaluations at centers that are contracted with the employer, they're rarely truly independent as contemplated under Arizona law. So I just ask you to keep that in mind, because the tendency is that the doctors at the contracted institution will do what the employer wants to save their contract and not lose it.
Right. Yeah, Councilmember Kavanaugh, you're absolutely correct on both those points. The first with the syndrome about the doc in the box, that you're just, you know, you're rushed in and you're rushed out. We've had quite a bit of conversation about that, and the city manager is certainly in support as well, that we would really like this to be a different experience for city employees. We don't want it to have a minute clinic feel. We want them to be able to come into the clinic, recognize the doctor, have a relationship with the doctor, spend some additional time other than the, you know, the 10 to 12 minutes that you might spend with the doctor today that evaluates you, you have a sore throat, gives you some amoxicillin, and off you go. We really want to have a better developed relationship at some point. It will take some time. We're going to have to manage it in such a way so that employees have a good experience on that first time in, get to know the doctor, and recognize that they can receive better service potentially at this facility and at a lower cost than where they go today. So we're going to work hard on doing that. Insofar as the workers' comp component of the clinic, we're not entirely certain at this point how much workers' compensation or other types of services might be provided there. We've thought about doing it as sort of a phased-in approach, that we would start sort of small with the services that are provided and then slowly expand that as the need and utilization increased. The other thing that I wanted to mention is our benefits administrator just came back from a two-day conference on the development and management of wellness centers, and the 2 points that she heard from that conference that she came back with is, number one, it is wildly successful in nearly every place that it's been put in, and number two, it is so wildly successful that we got to make sure that we've got enough space to build out when employees really become excited about attending that. So all of those things are in the mix, and they're being fairly considered to make sure that we manage and get it put in place in the right way.
Then my last question has to deal with the issue of if for some reason it doesn't work out, are you going to build something into the contract that allows the city to terminate it? I mean, we just read about what happened with the state contracting with the private provider last July and deciding it. The services were not, this is for the Department of Corrections, but just as an example, the state was able to move quickly when problems were identified to terminate that contract. And I'm just assuming that if for some reason it doesn't live up, the selected provider doesn't live up to expectations, that you have some
sure
factors in your agreement that permit you to deal with that situation.
Yeah, we'll negotiate that.
Councilman Richards? I just want to confirm this is for employees and their dependents. What about retirees? How are we going to handle retirees with this clinic?
You know, we've had a lot of conversation about that as well. The first thing that we want to do is make sure that the employees themselves receive a good experience. Some of the fears that we have is that if we initially open it up to employees, dependents, and retirees, that there will be such a run on the center that maybe our employees won't have the best experience right at first because maybe they can't get in when they'd like to get in. So the initial thought is that we would open it up for employees and dependents first to see how that goes, take a look at utilization, and then at some point expand that out to retirees, although we've not made a firm decision on that as well.
We've asked our employee benefit trust to function like its own business. It's got to fit a business model that makes financial sense. And so I'm interested to see how this fits with that model and interested to see the RFP as it gets developed. Because, you know, how you write those RFPs, the questions you ask and the things you require are really key to having a successful
business. Yeah. Now, the RFP, the RFP is in place. It's all developed. It's in draft form, and we'd be happy to send that to you if you'd like to review.
I'd love to see that. Thank you.
Sure can.
Councilman Finter?
With regard to that bullet point up there, it says move from 80-20 to basic. Could you remind me again what basic services cover? And then a second question would be with regard to medications and prescriptions and things. Is there any built-in, or are we just going to stay with the new vendor that we have now?
Yeah. The 80-20 plan, as you know, is we refer to that as the benchmark plan. That's where most of employees are after satisfying their deductible. 80% of the cost of the allowable charge is paid for by the city, 20% by the employee. And there is, of course, a premium that employees pay on a monthly basis for that. The 50-50 plan is our catastrophic plan, and it is free at the moment. But there is a much higher deductible. Do you recall what that deductible is? There's a much higher deductible for that plan. So it's really for those employees that are pretty healthy, don't ever plan on going to the doctor. But if something catastrophic were to happen, then yes, it would cover them. But again, the downside to that is the deductible is pretty high on it. But the premium is free.
Councilor Bridges? Is there any effect with the new health care legislation that kicks in January 2014 to this? Is my first question. And the second is, on your chart on page 14, you show us a chart of increasing health expenditures. And then you have the last year of it drops. So is that part of a downward trend? Is that part of a, you know, what does that look like? And then I think I'd like some additional information on how these health expenditures relate to members in the plan. So how many employees, dependents, and retirees are in the plan year over year to kind of match that up with how our increase in costs are tracking?
Sure.
So, because, I mean, we went through a period where we shrunk our workforce, and I'm guessing that's what accounts for the downward tick.
To some extent, I think you had three parts to that. How does healthcare impact us in 2014? Those healthcare regulations really won't have an impact on the medical clinic itself. Now, there are some regulations that will have to be put into place in 2014. We've got the exchanges, as you know, that are being considered now. We're not sure exactly how they're going to work out for us. Buck Consultant is the organization that's guiding us through that, and we haven't gotten a lot of direction on that as well. But we're not seeing the 2014 healthcare regulations having much of an impact on this proposal with the clinics. Your second point with how the costs have come down, we're somewhat proud about that because that is a result of some very aggressive cost containment strategies that we put into place. It has to do with employees being better educated about going in-network instead of out of network. We rebid a number of our contracts, including our pharmacy benefit manager contract, and that single contract alone saved us about $2.5 million for the same level of service. So that dip is largely as a result of better education from employees and how they're using their benefit, as well as some operational cost containment measures that we put into place as well. As far as tracking the population between one plan to the next, at one point the majority of our employees were on the copay plan. Through a series of better education, that we feel like the 80-20 plan can provide the same level of service and overall can do it at a lower cost. More and more employees have gone from the copay plan to the 80-20 plan, and we would expect with the adoption of this facility that trend would likely continue.
But Mayor and Council, our projections forecast going forward from the end of that chart, and we probably should have given that to you. You'll see it in the forecast coming up in a couple of weeks. Healthcare costs, at least even on a national trend, is projected to continue to increase at a rate near 10% a year. So we'll be, we think we'll be able to manage that at least for the next year or so. But the trend continues to grow. And what we're hoping to do with a wellness center is to try to manage some of that cost, if you would, ourselves by bringing in some of these wellness care facilities and bringing the doctors in. And we think we have a better chance on the front end if we can do a wellness service as opposed to people waiting. Unfortunately, because of the cost of health care, as it continues to grow, many families begin to delay or defer their health care checkups. And so that then puts them more in acute care kind of, which is obviously much more expensive. We really do believe if we can get on the front end in a preventative way, changing lifestyle habits, that will be a lot cheaper than having to deal with that on the back end. And that's really what we're trying to accomplish with this program that we're looking at.
Just real quick, as I sit here, I think about how I love Doc in a Box. Go look down my throat, give me a prescription, I'm out of here. That's. But my wife utilizes healthcare a lot differently with our children. I'm just wondering, we probably should have a mom with children, a senior, a single person, all be part of reviewing this RFP that goes out to make sure that.
It'd be like going to the vets where you have cats on one side and dogs on the other. You have three different doors.
Think about those populations.
That could work.
Think about those populations as we design the RFP, because we're going to be serving a big variety of people and moms with their kids. If we want them to come, we're going to have to provide an experience.
We have a lot of moms with kids that are employees, and so we will include them in the review. Alicia, that's why I think Alicia. There's a reason Alicia's at the front of this, because she is a mom kid. So I think that we're getting.
I don't want just healthcare bureaucrats. Look at
this. Councilman Fender?
And just as a follow-up, I hope you rethink this retiree thing. In my mind, it says that's the group that impacts us a lot because they're older, they have more needs, and they're also impacted, quite frankly, from the increased costs with a limited source of income in the retirement years. And I know you don't want to overwhelm the system, but, boy, that seems like where you could really make an impact. And then the other was medication would stay the same as far as physicians there, physician assistants says, hey, you need amoxicillin, you still go to where we currently go. There wouldn't be any dispensary or anything.
Yes, Councilmember Fender, that's what the idea would be. They would still write the prescription. They would probably go elsewhere to get that. Now, we have considered that even on-site, if there's just the basic medication, your penicillin-type drugs, there's a possibility that those could be dispensed from the facility, but we're not anticipating having a big pharmacy center at that location.
Yuri, I failed to have you introduce everyone up there. We know people, but other people don't. Four people sitting there, two of which have looked good, but they haven't said anything. You want to introduce everyone so people watching at home will know who we have up there.
To my left is Peggy Lynch. She is our, our new assistant benefits administrator, but she's been with us for a little while, doing a terrific job in our benefits office. Alicia White, I introduced, from the water department, and Jim Fry from the fire department.
Good. Thank you. Any further questions?
Who are the ones that are sick?
They're sick. They don't get to be introduced. Okay. So did we already go over time? I guess we haven't gone over the time frame, have we? Or did we already go over that?
There you go.
Our next steps, obviously, we wanted to present to you and get your input. We're hoping to release the RFP in February. And to answer some of your questions on the RFP, we have written the RFP to include retirees. We just are looking at how we would possibly phase that in. And we also wrote the RFP so that if a vendor wants to bring in generic drugs, for dispensary, again, just some common ones, not a full dispensary, that is an option. So it depends on what the vendor brings to us. We're hoping to evaluate the proposals and return back to council for approval sometime late spring, early summer, with the hope that we can get a clinic up and running in 2013.
Would you do us a favor? Believe it or not, when staff sends out RFPs, we get phone calls from people, and we don't even know that they've gone out. Would you just, when you shoot the RFP, just get a copy to us, put it in our Dropbox or in something else, okay?
Absolutely.
So we have it available in case we want to glance over to look at it. So at least when we start getting phone calls from these groups and everything complaining about the RFP, which they do often, we at least have something that we can refer back to.
You bet.
That's okay.
Be happy to.
Is that all right? Everyone? Okay. Thank you. Next item is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the proposed partnership with Mace Arts Center and the Southwest Shakespeare Company.
Okay, so now I need to, do I click escape and then click that off? There it is. Yay.
Old English?
Yes. Ms. Hornstein, thou dost have the floor. Thou shalt speak.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mayor and Council members and Mr. Brady. And everyone here in the audience this morning, and thank you for allowing us to come share some exciting plans with you. I am, for the television audience, Cindy Ornstein, Director of Arts and Culture, and Executive Director of the Mesa Arts Center. And to my left is Jared Sacrin, who is the Producing Artistic Director of Southwest Shakespeare Company. And for just a moment of background, to note that Southwest Shakespeare Company is one of the founding resident companies at the Mesa Arts Center, and also is the largest single user of our facility in terms of rental days. We have already a close relationship, and we view Southwest Shakespeare as an incredibly important cultural organization in our community. It's no secret that they were going through some financial challenges recently and trying to figure out the solutions, and certainly one of those was reaching out to community and donors for assistance. But frankly, it was of mutual concern, not only to them, but to the Art Center and the Arts and Culture Department, to have Southwest Shakespeare be able to be a vibrant and healthy organization because of the benefits they bring to our community, the important anchor they are at the Mesa Art Center, and we really view them as an organization that brings a lot of, is a point of pride for the Mesa community and the region. So we got together, and necessity being the mother of invention, we realized through conversations about what kinds of solutions might be able to happen that, in fact, we had a lot of opportunities that we really should have been pursuing already in a more aggressive way, and this situation allowed us to explore those and come up with a plan that we're really excited about and we feel is absolutely the right thing for us to be doing. And so with that, I want to share what our plan is. First of all, we look at it as being a mutually beneficial opportunity. Here we have this really, truly superb professional theater company that is in our community with experience and skills to share. They have a reason to want to continue to build audiences and deepen their relationship to our community. We have a strong interest, as you know from prior conversations, in deepening our community engagement and also activating not only our physical campus, but the way we act as a resource to the community. And so an expanded programmatic and promotional partnership can achieve mutual goals and strengthen both organizations. And so the first aspect is a classical theater training initiative, and I'm going to ask Jared to share a little bit with you about what that will look like.
Southwest Shakespeare Company is a unique organization in that it's the only classical theater in the state, and its strength is in its standards of presenting classical works and offering training in theater that is really a kind of a something that we do that nobody else does, and we have a very active education program. So this is really a way of expanding a very active educational mission that we've always had since we were founded. And the Classical Theater Training Initiative would be a way of bringing those strengths to creating programs at the Art Center in partnership with the Art Center that would offer classes for, you know, students in the middle, high school, possibly even community college level, we could explore as well, that would give them a chance to hone their skills, to improve themselves as actors, and to create opportunities that don't exist currently. The other parts of that would be to create courses that would offer all sorts of range of skills, offer them to age groups that currently don't have classes as an opportunity, and to give them opportunities, perhaps, which I'll get to in a minute, to perform on stage as well and be incorporated into some of the productions.
Thank you, Jared. And to add that we're going to split the responsibilities on doing this as a way of expanding our studio program, where Southwest Shakespeare will have primary responsibility for implementing the actual training program, and the MAC would handle the promotion, the registration, and providing the space. So it would be a shared responsibility. We're also going to work on a theater internship program. And this is something that Southwest Shakespeare has done some of before, but they're currently on a bit of a hiatus from that program, and we're not only going to reinstate it, but reinvigorate it. It would enable training opportunities and hands-on practical experience in both performance and technical theater. And while we've had they have had some performance internships, the technical theater area is something that we've been really wanting to do, and the combination of what we do together will be able to make it much stronger than if the MAC had just done it on our own. It will be designed for motivated teens who have some theater experience. And the idea is that we have the ability for MAC staff to use its expertise in things like show management and theater and technical management and exposure to touring shows that we do all the time. Meanwhile, Southwest Shakespeare is involved with some things that we do not do, things like costume building and prop building and set building that are really essential experiences if you're trying to develop skills in technical theater. And then there are the things we both do that have to do with putting on the show, lighting and sound reinforcement and rigging concepts for rigging things, that really it would provide an extremely comprehensive training opportunity in technical theater, and our technical theater staff is really excited about this program, and they've been dreaming about doing this. And then there's performance theater internship opportunities.
And this aspect of the internship, and we've already had discussions with our education program about what internship means and to make this a meaningful relationship for people who get involved, that we would include the actors and performers in various aspects of our productions. And they would then learn hands-on what it takes to produce shows, what performances are involved with, certain professional standards of performing and presenting plays, producing them on stage. This, I think, would be incredibly valuable for young people to get this hands-on experience. And we produce in 3 of the 4 theaters, so they would get a variety of experiences, not just in single performing venue, but in all sorts of different configurations that we do over there. We've created at least half a dozen configurations in the Farnsworth, and in the other 2 spaces, we have been very inventive in how we produce, so we would give these young people a variety of ways of learning about how theater can be produced, create a positive relationship with an audience.
The next area says activation of Max Shadow Walk, and I'm going to talk about that, but there's also some expansive opportunities envisioned that relate to not only how we activate the Shadow Walk, but how we engage with community. So, you know, we've really been working hard to add more events to create the sense that the Shadow Walk is a community gathering place and that people have ownership of it. And in a couple of weeks, I'll be coming and presenting some more ideas that have to do specifically with that idea. But we see this as an opportunity for enhancing everything else that we're already trying to do in terms of our initiatives to create that vital space. And the goal is how do we contribute more energy and excitement to that environment and broaden the activities that are available there. So Southwest Shakespeare is constantly creating new vehicles in their shows and in their outreach program that can be also offered publicly for free at events on weekends. We're going to have a new stage at the north end of the campus. There's going to be opportunities more and more to add demonstrations, free events on an evening where they help provide some of the programming. We did our first little foray into this on second Friday in January when which ended up being very fortuitous. The second Friday theme was Ye Olde Main Street Renaissance Fair. And so we put on the Bard's New Year as a mini festival in conjunction with Second Friday. And despite being absolutely frigid, we had really, really nice attendance. It went extremely well. For Spark, Mesa's Festival of Creativity in March, Southwest Shakespeare will be doing some pop-up performances where sword fights will, with people doing Shakespearean scenes, will erupt in the middle of the Shadow Walk as a surprise to visitors, and it'll be very fun and exciting. And even though I've told you it's happening, you won't know when. It won't be on the schedule. The other thing I wanted to mention regarding this larger aspect of community engagement is that we're really trying to be very open-minded about what these opportunities are. So, for example, we are right now in early planning stages about a multi-year, quite comprehensive partnership with ASU Polytechnic for helping jointly create a more vibrant cultural scene on their campus. And when that's further along, we'll come and tell you more about that as well. It's very exciting. So one of the things we immediately started talking with them about was how cool it would be, and Jared agreed, and ASU Poly agreed, how cool it would be to include in that one of the Shakespeare shows, or maybe more, performed in their absolute gem of a black box theater on their campus that is highly underutilized. That could be offered for the students, but also open to the public in the southeast quadrant of the city. So there are a lot of opportunities. And Jared's going to mention that we also are looking at promotional collaborations.
Yeah, this partnership, as we envision it, would include utilizing our database, our relationship with our audience and our patrons, and combining it with the Arts Center to cross-promote, to include some materials that would go out that would benefit both organizations simultaneously, kind of piggybacking on events so that we can get maximum attention for what we're doing. That would include print materials, but also things like live performances, live announcements, using our actors in costume or just because they're very good in front of audiences that they can be spokespeople. And to help promote the Arts Center as well as our own organization.
And so I'm not going to read through the timeline. I will say what we've done is planned on a one-year partnership with the understanding that we'll review it towards the end of that year and hopefully continue it. So we've planned a two-year timeline in order to be able to see where it goes. And part of that is because what you'll see in the year one timeline is piloting things, testing things, doing workshops that later expand to full classes, doing a lot of planning. The first year we'll have quite a lot of planning because we don't want to pretend that we can just snap our fingers and instantaneously have a full range of successful programs. We would rather plan appropriately and build it gradually. And so this timeline shows us starting with putting our toe and foot in the water with certain joint promotions, certain presentations at events, some pilots of the internships and the classes. And then moving into year two, what we would hope is that each of those would start to unfold like a flower opening, that what started as a small pilot would grow into a full year program, and we would start doing independent events that we plan together that are in addition to the ones that exist currently.
Councilman
yes.
Kavanaugh has a question.
Yeah, Cindy, one of the things that caught my attention, I appreciate the idea of having a possible partnership with Wilkes University in terms of their creative writing program. I think we do have some great resources in the colleges and universities coming to downtown, and I'm sure that there will be other opportunities for Southwest Shakespeare, the city, to collaborate. Benedictine, for example, has a huge fine arts program. I think I appreciate the idea that you're already exploring the ideas of partnering with new institutions.
Thank you. Yes, in fact, we've spoken to the universities about them, particularly starting with Benedictine and Wilkes, because they both have some aspect of art training that they're bringing to our community, and they're both very excited, and they're right on board with the expanding those opportunities. And in fact, with Wilkes, we are looking at they do in their Master's of Creative Writing. They do a wonderful project where their master's students write 10-minute plays. And one of the ideas is that those usually only get shown in limited staged readings, and what fun it would be partnering together to use those to create a new special event that showcases Wilkes' program and our organizations. So we're very excited about that.
We've already talked about that.
Yes. So, and in fact, Bonnie Culver from Wilkes has joined the Southwest Shakespeare Board. So
we're trying to get Albright to expand their adult programs. Now don't include the fine arts, but when I was back in Reading, I was amazed to see that their fine arts program was actually ranked in the top 25 collegiate fine arts program in the entire country of all classes.
Yes, they're very well respected.
A little hidden gem there, and so we're trying to talk them into also. It's fun to see this collaboration and come together and this consortium working the way that we hope for with the university and colleges and what we have here in the city already.
And what I also want to add to that is that you'll hear more about this when I come to an Art Place presentation in a couple of weeks, but we are envisioning the relationship with the universities to go well beyond just the arts programs. We view, first of all, our resources as being important to all the students and our programs, but also we view all people as having inherent creativity and opportunities for self-expression being important to all people. So the opportunities to engage students we will seek to make them available across the board to students in all kinds of programs who might enjoy them extracurricularly or who might be inspired by them in terms of thinking creatively within whatever field they're pursuing.
I'm glad to hear that you think that all people have certain talents and creativity, although if you come this Saturday evening to Musical Magic, we will do our best to dispel that notion, to prove you wrong.
Uh-huh. I'll be watching for that. I doubt it very much, knowing how you performed in the past.
Saturday, 6 o'clock, Mace Arts Center.
That's right.
Piper Theater.
That's right.
And buy your tickets now online. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Lead performer, Mayor Scott Smith. So one thing that I want to just point out on this timeline, too, I mentioned the ASU Poly opportunity, but also we're really excited about the idea that we would be developing what Jared is calling Camp Shakespeare, which would add to a growing number of summer camp opportunities on our campus. We are actually in conversation with, we have an expansion and an addition this summer that we're looking at in terms of summer programs, and then next summer this would add Camp Shakespeare into the mix, so we start having just really every space on campus chock full of young people in the summer. The service agreement we're looking to go with is a $50,000 contract fee for the development and implementation of the programs we've just outlined. For the first year, waiving the rent and utility payments for 55 East Main Street, where Southwest Shakespeare has been paying $400 a month,
yeah,
and covering utilities. And then there's a $15,000 fund that is not handed to Southwest Shakespeare. It's kept in the max budget to pay reimbursement for out-of-pocket type expenses that happen that are necessary for implementing these programs that are additional costs that would not have been part of their budget were we not doing the partnership. And so that is what we have in mind. And any other questions, we'd be happy to entertain.
Questions? Councilmember Pinter?
Just an observation. I have to tell you, the first time I met Ms. Ornstein, she had come as was being interviewed for the job that you currently have, and she laid out a vision. You laid out a vision of how to make the Arts Center a more community-oriented place for everybody in the community. And I can tell you, I was a little skeptical at first, and I was always a little cynical about how things had come, but watching over these last year or two, that seeing how things are going, so impressed. This is just another fine example. I appreciate the Shakespeare folks and what's going to happen here. Just a great different way to think of things, and boy, I think the people in the community and watching what's happened really appreciate it too. So really
thank you.
Appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for the creativity working together to I don't want to say help save, because these groups are integral to our community and to the success of a very large investment we have in downtown and the future of downtown. I mean, I'm excited about, as you start talking about the collaboration between the colleges and how we can feed off of each other. And so, this little program actually helps a much bigger program, get its footing and help succeed. And you see how these things all work together to create I hate the word synergy, but I don't know how else to say. Where there's cross benefits, and we've appreciated having Shakespeare in 5155, simply because they've been there, and now that we have a building that, two years ago, was a shell building in many ways. Shakespeare's was unfinished, bare floors. Walls that had huge holes in. I mean, they were literally just they're in a very dilapidated. Now you go over there, the entire building is being used for useful purposes, which benefits us because we no longer have a blighted building. And hopefully someday we'll have something more exciting there. But for right now, what we have there with Benedictine and the Historical Museum and the Shakespeare Center is the prime tenant of that space on the east. We've seen an incredible resurgence, and that place now looks better, it feels better, and it has a lot more activity than it did. And making sure that we have organizations such as Shakespeare not only survive but thrive is important to those kind of successes. So thank you, appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions? All right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Here report on upcoming job order contract projects. Ms. Uning.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. We just have one this morning. It's a small project to add an inspection port to the 42-inch pre-stressed concrete pipe out at Lindsay and Adobe for the Water Department. We need to get it in place because we have a crew coming in town to inspect some of these large diameter pipes to make sure they're still in good condition.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you. Your reports on meetings and conferences attended. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. The other night I attended an event sponsored by Mesa Sister Cities, and I want to compliment them and Mesa Community College. The Community College is hosting 21 exchange students from the Teachers College at Beijing Union University, and it was a wonderful event, initiating the celebration of Chinese New Year, hosted by Southwest Ambulance. But it was a great turnout by Sister City advocates, really from around the Phoenix area, the entire area, in welcoming the students here. And again, Mesa Community College has done a wonderful job, both their professors and host families, taking in the students who are here for about 2 weeks. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything else?
I had the opportunity of going down to Tucson last Friday with several other mayors, Mayor Stanton and Mayor Lopez Rogers and Mayor Lord, Mayor Rothstein. Yeah, that's all. As the second meeting of the Mayor's Education Forum, excited about some of the input, some of the things we're just talking about in the community as it relates to how we might assist and be supporters of the educational efforts in Arizona. So that was very, very enjoyable. Okay. Ms. Kent, Mr. Brady had to step out on important matter, so...
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Cindy mentioned a little while ago, an evening of musical magic fundraiser gala to support the Children's Arts Center, or the Mesa Arts Center and Children's Arts Education Program will be occurring Saturday, February 2nd at the Mesa Arts Center. You want to do another?
It'll just be occurring?
we'll be
extravaganza.
Extravaganza.
Take center stage.
Yes, we'll take center
Tickets
stage.
Tickets are available.
Yes, the Mesa Arts Center website.
Remember, as you're watching the performances, it's for the children.
It's for the children. For so the if children. You'd like to come see Mayor Smith perform.
And as you can tell, my voice is in very good shape to be doing
that
something.
That happened last year, too, didn't it?
2 years ago.
Or 2 years ago, a couple years ago? Yeah.
Good timing. It's called a viable excuse. Oh,
plausible.
He's not normally that bad. He just had a cold. Planned it well, didn't I?
You did. Well, we all look forward to that on Saturday night, and it starts at 6:30 with a concert starting at 7:30. We also have the 2013 Regional Unity Walk is this Saturday at 10:30 a.m. Participants from Mesa will meet at 10 a.m. at Tempe Beach Park Amphitheater, and no registration is required for this event, but wear a turquoise T-shirt to represent Mesa, Arizona. And also, Vice Mayor Summers is hosting a free pancake breakfast in District 6, Fire Station 219, on Saturday, February 9th, from 8 to 10. And the Red Cross will also be in attendance for a blood drive from 8 in the morning until 1 p.m. And the station is located at 3361 South Signal Butte Road. Next study session and council meeting will be this Monday, February 4th.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Mickelson, do we have any requests to speak?
No requests.
All right. I'll entertain a motion to enter an executive session. Have it from Councilman Kavanaugh, second Councilman Finter. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are moving into executive session. Thank you.